The following hour is brought to you by Midas Resources, your trusted source for precious metals. Call Midas today at 1-800-686-2237.
Welcome to America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney. How are you doing in all those nooks and crannies? Probably horrified at the new news that U.S. Special Forces tried to free that journalist, the freelancer James Foley, the American who was beheaded by ISIS. You can't help but be drawn to that and really feel for the family if you've caught them at all releasing statements and talking a little bit about the family, their son James. The Pentagon said that there were dozens of special forces that landed inside Syria at a location they thought where Foley was and some other Americans. Unfortunately, they weren't there. So was it bad intel? Were they too late to you know, what happened here? Who knows? And unfortunately, they did not get to them because they could have saved his life. This beheading pretty much clearly points out that these guys are not fooling around. They are abject evil. They are absolutely non-caring about any reaction to what they are doing. So now, what does the U.S. do? What should the response be? Supposedly, and I heard this earlier in the day from a decent source, and it looks like they're talking about how many troops they're going to send to Iraq to reinforce whatever the security is at any of the diplomatic places. Because of all of the cries of we're going to just cut the heads off Americans, well, you have some Americans that are there. Not just journalists, but there is the one journalist, Stephen Sotloff, who is a hostage. And they're threatening to kill him unless President Obama backs off and stops with the airstrikes. The U.S. military had launched 14 airstrikes against Islamic State targets near the Mosul Dam since the video of Foley's beheading popped up on the internet just a day or so ago. Now, added troops would increase the number of military people in Iraq, and it would be up over 1,000. It'd be probably close to almost 1,100 plus. If that happens, it hasn't been said yet at this point, but I can't imagine that, the fact that you have people being beheaded, not just the threats of the Americans, but others, it's the humanitarian thing to do would be to just pull everyone out of there that you possibly can. I mean, this isn't even war. This is just beyond what war is. And this threat is real because the ability to raise money, the ability to get the weapons they need, ISIS needs, and the fact that they're recruiting people from the West, recruiting a lot of people in England, and the Brits are saying that they're going to do everything they can to squash them like bugs. But it's getting that intel and it's figuring out how to do that. And there was a chance to wipe out ISIS when they were in Syria, but it didn't happen, or a chance to get to them sooner. Now they're rallying more people. They're rallying more people. I think it's clear. I mean, obviously, ISIS needs to be eliminated, needs to be wiped out. But easier said than done. They're pretty elusive. They're aware of what they're doing. They certainly have a grasp on that. That's why they released that video on purpose, to try to elicit the response. So now what? The kidnappers threatened Foley after they didn't get the ransom, because they also wanted ransom. That didn't happen. Then there was this special forces push to get Foley out and some other Americans. That didn't work, and then it was absolutely too late. And now, unfortunately, the image of James Foley is everywhere. And how many people have watched this? It's social media, and the macabre and just sickening. He was abducted in Syria in November of 2012. He was reporting what was going there for Global Post, which we talked to somebody earlier on the show who was tight with the CEO of Global Post and said that even though he was a freelancer, they spent millions trying to help, trying to get him. So they didn't just stand by. They tried to do whatever they, you know, whatever they could do. And they're trying, the family, to their credit, is trying to push for the release of the other hostage. And have said that, you know, they were never prouder of their son, and he gave his life trying to expose the world of suffering of the Syrian people, what was happening there. And, you know, once he was picked up at that border area, it was so tricky. So the White House National Security Council said U.S. intelligence agencies are still really trying to determine how authentic it was. But I think without a doubt, and this is what his parents are saying, too, as well. And it's appalling, the horrors that these ISIS thugs have been perpetrating. And the fact that their control, their grip, and what they're telling people and glorifying death in this way is just sickening. It's so heartbreaking for that family. So here's the deal. Would you be on board? You know, you think about this. Would you be on board if there was more of an invasion? If at some point it gets to the point where we're pushed to the wall and we're threatened? It's one thing to say, well, it's awful what happened there, but somebody's covering it and they're in that situation. But boy, I'm in the United States. I'm okay. I'm in my little area. I'm fine in my cul-de-sac. But what happens when it comes to you? And this is the threat. And this is the threat of the Islamic State. How serious do you think they are on acting out the things that they say they want to do to Americans? And we've already seen how that's played out once. We never want to see that again. And thank goodness we have not seen that. But at what point does something change in the game? And these people are game changers. From everything that I've been able to glean about them, from people with some good inside knowledge, this is beyond a lot of what Al-Qaeda was doing. This is beyond sort of the Islamic showboating. This is much more barbaric. Much more barbaric and to the point. This is what we're going to do, and if you don't do this, this is how we'll respond. So expect it. We'll go after Americans. If you keep targeting our stuff and you don't stay out of this, we will go after Americans. But then they flaunt what they're doing to some of the people in Iraq anyway. So massive, I think, anger from a lot of people in watching this poor journalist and his family now, of course, dealing with it. And these people, I think, make Al-Qaeda look like amateurs compared to what they've done. I mean, they've got cities, populations under their wing, and they've got a lot of wealthy oil-producing lands, a lot of money coming their way. So these mass executions, severed heads on poles, crucified men, they're frightening people, they're trying to recruit people. We should be worried. Coming up next, we're going to lighten the load right here at the top with Dumb Things I Shouldn't Have Done. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment permanent basis, but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Mike Stenerson from Midas Resources. At no time in history have precious metals been more important, certainly not in my 22 years in the industry. The dollar has lost over 90% of its value in the last 60 years. No fiat currency has ever survived the government printing presses. Ours is not immune. The time is now to be proactive. 1-800-686-2237, extension 116. Anything tied to the dollar is at risk. CDs, annuities, 401ks, IRAs, stocks, bonds, you name it. So decide. Do you want to leave a legacy of wealth or debt for your family? The choice is yours. Call me at 1-800-686-2237, extension 116. That's 1-800-686-2237, extension 116. Be proactive, not reactive. Call 1-800-686-2237, extension 116.
So we decided to upgrade the look of our home.
You know, improve the curb appeal.
We decided to add the look of stone to the exterior.
We really like the stacked stone look.
Yeah, but when I checked into the price, it was ridiculous. No way could we afford it.
Then a friend told me about Genstone. G-E-N-S-T-O-N-E.
Genstone comes in lightweight panels made of polyurethane. They've actually engineered the hassle out of installation. No mortar, no mesh. It was easy. Even I could do it.
We just screwed the panels to the wall and it looks like stone. I mean, it really looks like stone.
Yeah, from the box to the wall in minutes.
We love the look of our home now.
And Genstone is durable, comes with a 25-year warranty, and offers additional R-value for insulation.
If you want the look of stone at a price you can afford, call Genstone.
At 855-955-STONE.
Trust me, you'll save money.
And you'll love the look.
855-955-STONE. That's 855-955-7866.
Indeed, one of my favorite things that we do here on America Tonight is a really cool segment that many of you are now participating in. And bravo, bravo to all of you for listening and actually throwing in on this, because I think that there is, I think there's a tendency for all of us to beat up on ourselves when we do something silly. And sometimes it's something silly that really gets us all tangled up, and then usually it's very easy to straighten it out. But, you know, when we do things like leave our keys in the car and then we have to call the locksmith, and we have a car that's older or we have a car that's newer and we're stuck and we can't find our fob. Where's our key fob? Yeah, where's that OnStar thing? What do we do? I know a lot of people get caught up in that, especially to renting cars. I know people that have had problems with renting cars. All right, so without further ado, I won't keep the suspense any longer. I won't keep you in suspense. It's time for our fun segment called Dumb Things I Shouldn't Have Done.
Well, that was dumb.
All right, this one from Sharon. And Sharon says, Kate, I don't know if you can relate to this or not. I know you grew up in the Northeast and you've lived all over the place. But if you lived in the Northeast, I'm sure that you understand the beauty of subways and trains. I can't tell you how many bags I have left on a subway, on a train, occasionally a bus. I don't take many buses, but occasionally I'm forced into a bus situation. And I don't know what it is. I don't think I'm an airhead. For some reason, I think I'm probably so tired that I put a bag on the floor next to me and whatever it is, and I leave it. And once it's gone, because try in a city of New York trying to track down a bag. And when I say bags, I'm not talking about my handbag with my license or any of that in it, thank goodness. But I am talking about other things that are equally sometimes as important. For example, special cold bags that I bring to work, and then I lose it, and then I've got to go get another one. Any suggestions on how I can make this dumb thing something that doesn't weigh me down any longer? Yeah, don't carry bags. How about that? It sounds like you have too many things, and I don't know that. I'm just interpreting it. So when you're overwhelmed, like you have a big bag and a briefcase or some other things or backpack, you have too many things in your hands. So you have to have something that sticks on you. If you don't have a backpack, then it's a backpack with something light in it, but not so much. You know, you need one thing. That's what I think. I think it's a one-thing deal. That's funny. I've never given advice on dumb things, but I was asked, so there you go. That's what I would assume. It's when you have too many things in too many places that you get that you start to lose them. That is just my experience. Okay, this one from Brian, who says, Kate, I have been meaning to email you about dumb things. I live in Sarasota, and I've been listening to the show. My friends listen to the show, too. You're starting, my dear, to get a big following here in our fair city. And I think the dumbest thing that I've ever done, and, I don't know how I did it, but I was on a golf course not too far from Sarasota, and I, three different times on the course, left my clubs. So once I did it when I was going to hit a driver, and instead I picked a different club, so I laid it down and somebody behind us found it and drove it up to us. Another time I left a club because I had hit a putt and then I walked away to tend the flag for somebody else and I forgot my putter. Eventually I got that back, but it seems I have a hard time with my golf clubs. Yeah, you're caught up in the moment, the excitement of the game, the conversation. I've done that. I have done it. In fact, I love the game of golf. I don't always get to play like I used to, but I'm thinking what it was. I want to say it was like a 7-iron or something. And you sort of favor a club, and I did, and that club I left and lost, and I was so bummed just because I just liked it, and I had to get another one. But I couldn't find anything that was similar, so I think I eventually went to, it was like they call it Play It Again Sam's, and somehow I was in there and I found a club that was pretty similar, but that's too much information. By the way, golf is becoming not such an elite sport for people who are saying, she must be a country clubber. They have golf courses all over the place, and you can play golf pretty cheaply, especially now because they're desperate to get people into the game. Okay, here's one from Jake. Wow, Jake's never sent us anything before. It's Jake, Kate. The dumb things is very, very funny. I have a million of them, actually. But probably the dumbest thing that I ever did is I went out on a canoe on Lake Travis, which is in Austin, Texas, for people who don't know. And I didn't really know much about canoeing. I know a lot about like speedboats and stuff, but I decided, it'd be so fun to go out and get some exercise and jump on the canoe, and I did. And unfortunately for me, somehow I lost my paddle. And there wasn't a lot of people around, so it seems I was trying to do a makeshift paddle thing. Eventually somebody caught up with me, but it took a while, and I was roasting out on Lake Travis. It was pretty embarrassing, and I let go of the paddle, and it's not like I was in some great big ocean, but I could not find the paddle, could not get it back, and so it turned into a nightmare. Yeah, that's not good when you lose your paddle, especially when you're alone, which it sounds like, because if you were with somebody else, then there would probably be another paddle, I'm assuming, and then you could kind of, it would still be hard, it would be a pain, but you could figure it out. So probably alone. That's a problem when you lose the things that you need. Paddle would definitely be one of them. I have nothing else to add to that. I've never even been in a canoe. I've been in a kayak before. I love boats. I've been in boats, but I've never been in a canoe. It looks hard. It looks like I'd have to rely on the other person to be as good on one side, and you're just digging in, and I don't know. Maybe it's fun. Maybe I'm wrong. Okay, let's move to another one. This one from Keith, who says, Kate, dumb thing that I shouldn't have done. Boy, where do I start? It would include a lot of things, but probably the dumbest thing is I had a wedding that was a destination wedding. I had a pretty cool tuxedo. You know, we're all fussy about our clothes, and in the real world, I'm not normally fussy, but for the whole wedding thing, I was. You get the thing fitted, which I did, and got poked and prodded, and I had to bring the tux with me. I forgot the tux. The reason I forgot the tux is because I had my other clothes in the bag that they had given me, and for some reason I switched it. So when I went to go to the airport, it was too late by the time I got there and got to the destination. I opened the bag and I did not have a tuxedo. So it was a mad scramble, and let's put it this way, in Jamaica it wasn't easy to make up for that. I ended up getting married in jeans, so my bride was not too happy. Not too happy just because I was so picky about the whole tux thing. Wow, that's a bad thing. That's a sad thing. That's more than just dumb things. Oh, that's a sad thing. Because you're right, you go through that whole thing of the fitting, and then you figure out what you want, and then you have it, and you have to take it. It's always tough when brides or bridesmaids freak out about that when they have to take something on a plane. They're worried more about wrinkling it or messing it up or, you know, whatever, where they're storing it. But forgetting it, oh, that ranks up there. I don't know. He didn't give us any more details as to whether he could have gotten another tuxedo, but it would be pretty tough. I mean, if you fly into some place before your wedding and you don't have your tux or your gown, you know, your wedding gown or something, you're just going to have to improvise, which it sounds like, hey, that's what I have to do. I have to improvise. But, oh, that's a bummer. Oh, yeah, I'd be upset. I would just feel so badly. Oh, and I guess he didn't even tell us that, but I guess there was nobody else that had a tuxedo they could lend him. I mean, I'm wondering, what did the groomsmen wear? Didn't anybody have anything that they could help him out, help a guy out, for goodness sake? He's going to get married. Help him out with the tux. Do something. All right, if you have a dumb thing and you want to share it, send it to me at americatonight.net. Label it dumb thing and then tell us what it is.
If you need to say happy birthday, happy anniversary, thank you, or simply, I'm thinking of you, ProFlowers.com is the key. ProFlowers has stunning bouquets, like the best-selling 100 blooms for $19.99. Plus, ProFlowers will include a glass vase for free. Sending someone a wonderful surprise of beautiful flowers sent fresh from the field is easy. Choose the bouquet you like, pick the delivery date, and each order is 100% guaranteed. Plus, all bouquets from ProFlowers are guaranteed to last at least 7 full days. Beautiful, fragrant flowers, picked fresh and sent to your loved one for lasting enjoyment. To get this incredible savings and send someone 100 gorgeous blooms with a free vase for $19.99, go to ProFlowers.com. Click the blue microphone in the top right corner and enter code PLOW. That's ProFlowers.com. Click the mic and enter code PLOW.
Independently leading the way for the nation. Compelling talk for every political persuasion. We are GCN.
Moms of America, stand up and stop taking abuse from your kids.
I pledge never to let my kid disrespect me ever again.
I pledge to stop letting my daughter walk all over me.
I pledge to stop living in fear of my son's anger.
I pledge never to feel like a bad parent ever again. Because I'm not.
I pledge to stop letting my child's behavior control my home.
I pledge to be a mom with kids who listen.
a total transformation mom.
I'm Janet Lehman, co-creator of the Total Transformation Program. We created the Total Transformation to help parents with difficult child behavior. Now, I'm giving it away free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. We'll let you keep it for free.
Call 1-800-256-7795. That's 1-800-256-7795. Call now. Call 1-800-256-7795. That's 1-800-256-7795.
Question. Could too many GMO foods and toxins be overloading your digestive and immune systems? Answer, yes. If you're searching for a powerful detox that's gentle enough to use every day, use Pro-EM1 from Terriganix. Pro-EM1 is a powerful liquid probiotic that uses good bacteria to suppress pathogens and gently eliminate toxins from your body. A healthy digestive system will cleanse and remove toxins, support weight loss, improve absorption of food nutrients, and aid in controlling yeast and other infections. Pro-EM1 is made with only non-GMO and certified organic ingredients, has no preservatives, and is dairy, soy, wheat, and gluten-free. Pro-EM1 is the key to your digestive health. Order Pro-EM1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganix.com, spelled Terraganix.com, or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Also available through Amazon Prime. Pro-EM1 from Terraganix. Life's getting better.
At 30dayfoodsupply.com, you can now purchase a one-of-a-kind product not available anywhere else, a meatless burger dry mix in four delicious flavors. With our new Oregon Trail Foods vegan burgers, all you do is add water and fry. They need no refrigeration. They're packaged in Mylar bags with an oxygen absorber for a long shelf life. They're non-GMO. They're gluten, soy, nut, and chemical-free, but they're loaded with flavor and a good source of carbs and protein, yet low in sodium. Flavors include Italian, spicy Mexican, six vegetable, and black bean olive. Go to 30dayfoodsupply.com or call 541-229-0010 and order today. Eat them every day, take them camping, or save them for an emergency. Check them out at 30dayfoodsupply.com and click on the vegan burger icon. That's 30dayfoodsupply.com, where all of our products are produced in Oregon by Oregon Trail Foods. 30dayfoodsupply.com.
My eyes have seen the beauty of a land bright and fair. My soul looked out and wondered, can we make the journey there? But I've lost my sight, and I have to be late. Well, I mean to work for justice till I'm dead gone. Sundown town, sundown town. Don't let them get you, buddy, when the sun goes down.
We've been talking about Ferguson, Missouri, and what's been happening. We'll catch you up on a lot of those details with the prosecutor, what's going to happen with the grand jury, and, of course, nothing's expected to come out of that until probably October, and some of the latest things that we've found out. And ultimately, here in America tonight, as many of you listening in the nooks and crannies across the nation know, we've really segued into a race conversation as to what's happened in Ferguson and what have we seen in other towns and what are we seeing. Jim Lowen is a great guy to have on the show to talk about that. He actually taught race relations for 20 years at the University of Vermont, and he's the author of Sundown Towns, A Hidden Dimension of American Racism, and I want to find out about those sundown towns. Jim, thanks for coming on the show.
Pleased to be with you.
So tell us what a sundown town is, and is Ferguson one of those?
Sure. A sundown town is a community that for decades, and some still do, was all white on purpose. Now, as soon as I say that, I have to qualify it a little bit. Some of these towns actually allowed one black family to live in them. I call these the exception that exemplifies the rule. And also, sundown suburbs typically allowed black families to be live-in servants, but that didn't violate the taboo. The taboo was against letting black folks live on their own in these towns. Now, a lot of people don't realize this. I had no idea when I went to research it that how prevalent these towns were and to some degree still are. Between 1890 and 1940, all kinds of communities across the North, it's a northern phenomenon, went sundown. That is, they drove out their black population, or if they already didn't have a black population, they took steps formally or informally to make sure that they wouldn't get any. Sundown suburbs, a little bit later, they came about 1905 to 1968. And maybe we should talk about Ferguson.
Wow. Yeah, no kidding. So Ferguson falls into that crack, you're saying, right?
Well, kind of. Ferguson, it turns out, had a small black community all the way back to the Civil War. A lot of sundown suburbs did, or, you know, many suburbs, for that matter, were nothing but farm areas before they became a suburb, and sometimes they had black farmers in those areas. But after about 1905, many of these towns started pressuring their black folks, and we see evidence that that's exactly what Ferguson did. Let me tell you just about the numbers. In 1940, Ferguson had just under 6,000 people, maybe something like 5,800. Now, by 1960, that's just 20 years later, Ferguson has exploded in size to over 22,000. So it's grown by a factor of four. Meanwhile, the black community of St. Louis has doubled. It's gone from 150,000 black folks in the St. Louis area to just under 300,000 by 1960. So, with all this growth in Ferguson and all this growth of the black community, Ferguson in 1940 had 38 black folks, but by 1960, that population was down to just 15. So 60% had been cold-shouldered out. And here's the tactics they used to do it. First of all, they put a chain across the main street that connected Ferguson to the little black suburb just to its west, a town called Kinloch, Missouri. Now, that chain made it impossible to drive directly on that road from Kinloch to Ferguson. You could still get into Ferguson if you went a little more roundabout. But, of course, it signaled, and its existence just sat there signaling to black folks, we don't want you. The second thing they did was realtors just didn't show homes to black would-be purchasers. And the third thing they did, we saw evidence of just in the last 11 days, and that is DWB-type policing. And of course, I mean driving while black. And this is typical. That is, sundown suburbs did a lot of that, still do. So in the late 60s and early 70s, the dam breaks. And we all know that, of course, at this point, Ferguson is not a sundown town. It's majority black, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
But it still suffers from what we call in sociology second-generation sundown town problems, most prominent of which is an overwhelmingly white police force. I believe it's 47 white folks and 3 black folks.
Sure.
And DWB attitudes on that force.
But how can you prove there's DWB attitudes? Because I know the phone lines are just going to explode, Jim, over that. So
well,
because of the history and what the makeup of the town is?
Yes, but also there's considerable evidence for what really hit me upside the head about by now a week ago, maybe 5 days ago. I live in Washington, D.C. There's a Washington Post reporter who is African, who happens to be African American. Well, he doesn't exactly just happen to be African American. The Washington Post has some intelligence. They know if you're going to go cover a largely black crowd scene, maybe you ought to send a black reporter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is just common sense. In fact, I've been telling people that way back in 1967, Vicksburg, Mississippi, a town I was in 1967, a town I was doing sociological research in 1967, Vicksburg knew enough that if there was a disturbance in a neighborhood in Vicksburg, they would ask whoever phoned in the disturbance, is it white folks or black folks? And if it was white folks, they'd send white cops. And if it was black folks, they'd send black cops. Well, of course, Ferguson simply can't do that because it doesn't have any black cops to speak of. So that's just incompetent policing. But the Washington Post sent a black reporter, and he filed a story. I heard him talk about it, and then I read his story in the Post. He was kind of hanging out in McDonald's with another black reporter from a different news service. They were doing some email. They were probably nursing their coffee. And the police come in, and they decide to close McDonald's. Exactly why and how that would help, not known. So they order everybody out, and this reporter starts to leave it. He asks courteously, may I take a minute to get my stuff? And he's picking up his stuff. And the what then happens is the police treat him so rudely and so brusquely and give him contradictory orders and so on that they wind up arresting him and holding him overnight in jail. And the biggest crime you could maybe call him guilty of is sitting in a booth in McDonald's. So that's an example of DWB-type policing that was just going on last week.
Wow. And when you talk about the towns and all of the work that you did and being there in Vicksburg, were you surprised at what you found? I mean, how do you crack that code? Because, you know, then other people will say, well, listen, I mean, we're trying to invite black officers to be part of the force, but they've got to pass the test because, you know, that's one of the things that was being told to us about Ferguson. So,
well, you've asked a complex question, both about standardized testing and also about how do I know a town is sundown? Are those your two questions?
Yeah.
Okay. When I first started to do, I'll answer the second question first. When I first started to do research on sundown towns, I had no idea what I had bitten off. I grew up in Decatur, Illinois, which is an industrial city about 120 miles northeast of Ferguson and northeast of St. Louis. Decatur had its race relations problems, but it was nothing like a sundown town, of course. I thought I would have maybe 10 sundown towns in Illinois, maybe 50 across the country. As I say, I had no idea. I had various aha experiences while doing this research. I'm now at a count of 506 sundown towns just in Illinois, 70% of all the communities that there are in Illinois. And I think a similar percentage occurred in Michigan, in Oregon, and in various other northern states. Now, how did I know they were sundown? Well, they have to not just be overwhelmingly white. They have to be overwhelmingly white on purpose, which means I have to find good evidence that something, for example, that something bad. Let me give you an example. Do you have time for an example?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay. So I was interviewing a woman. She happened to be the librarian and also a former member of the city council in a very small town, a town of about 500 in central Illinois. Usually I never bothered with towns that small, but in this case somebody had told me that they thought it was a sundown town and so on. And she had already agreed that she thought it was a sundown town. But that didn't convince me, just her saying that. And, of course, lots of people don't know the term. The question is, did she agree? Yes, we did keep out black folks. But here's what she then proceeded to tell me. I said, did you ever have a black classmate? She said, no, I never did. She said, I went to school for 13 years counting kindergarten, and not only did I never have a black classmate, but furthermore, there was never a black in the entire school system. So it must have been a sundown town. Well, that doesn't prove it was a sundown town. All that proves is the demography, which I already knew. But then she said the following. I take that back. When I was in seventh grade, I did have a black classmate for about a week. Now, that's very interesting. Very few families move into a town, go through all the bureaucratic hoops to register their kid in the public schools for a week. So that's already beginning to be evidence. And so then I asked her, well, did you ever hear that there was any trouble? And she said, well, yes, there was a fire. But then they should have expected something like that because it was a sundown town. Now, I consider right there, that proves it, that it was a sundown town. It turns out that I got another confirmation from the city attorney, so there's no doubt in that case. And that's what I did all across the North, all across America, to prove that these towns were, in fact, all white on purpose, not just by accident.
Yeah. Hold on a second. Jim, can you spend a few more minutes with us?
Yes.
All right, hang on.
Five.
Okay, hang on just a second. We're speaking with Jim Lowen, and we're talking about sundown towns. We'll be right back in just a minute.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
The human body is extraordinary. Despite all the stresses we inflict upon it, it still works hard to stay in balance. Thousands upon thousands of people rely upon Heart and Body Extract to help their body stay balanced. This excellent 100% natural herbal formula helps maintain healthy blood pressure levels, cleans arteries, promotes good circulation, balances cholesterol, and more. HB Extract, paired with healthy lifestyle choices like good nutrition and exercise, can give you a life free of pain, sickness, and fear. Recapture your youthful vitality and experience your body healing itself with the aid of HB Extract. It's extremely effective and it starts working in just days. Visit HBExtract.com to learn more and to read scores of testimonials from satisfied customers. And we've never increased our price in over 10 years. That makes Heart and Body Extract as great a value now as it was the first day we sold it. A healthy heart is a happy heart. Call 866-295-5305 or go to HBExtract.com.
We pick it back up again with Jim Lowen, and we're talking about race relations, and he studied this, he taught this at the University of Vermont, as I mentioned at the top, and he's the author of fascinating book, Sundown Towns, A Hidden Dimension of American Racism. So, Jim, in talking about these sundown towns, what you found, all the research, things that really blew your mind, how bad is the situation in the United States? I mean, you know, if somebody says, well, geez, there's not as much racism as people think, what would you say to that?
Well, they could go spend some time in sundown town. I mean, just among other things, the rhetoric in sundown towns is simply disgusting. The N-word is routinely used. Jokes are used that I don't have to be too high. I'm white, first of all,
right.
But I don't have to be too hypersensitive to say that this is a disgusting joke. I think I won't give you an example, but I forgot one on the tip of my tongue. But let me say this. Despite the fact that we had all these sundown towns across the country, I'm still an optimist. And the reason is I've got a couple of reasons. And I'm an optimist about Ferguson. I think that sundown towns are on their last legs. I think that every time one becomes notorious, as I say, Ferguson wasn't quite a sundown town, but let me do what I can to make one notorious right here, and that would be Kenilworth, Illinois. Kenilworth is the richest and most prestigious suburb of Chicago, and it was formed in 1905 or 6 with several specific ordinances, one of which said, no Negroes and no Jews. It is now 2014, and in the 100 and whatever that is, 108 years or so since it was founded, Kenilworth has had exactly two black families, as best as I can tell. One lasted 3 months, and one lasted 12 years. It has not a single black family now, or at least it didn't in the 2010 census, and it didn't when I last talked to the realtor there. Not one. Okay, and here it is, the most prestigious suburb of Chicago. Well, I would suggest that we all need to give places like Kenilworth the opposite of status. When somebody says, well, I've moved to Kenilworth, the response needs to be, oh, really? Oh, that's too bad. And of course, that will blow people's mind because it's supposed to be a great feather in your cap to have moved there.
Right.
Are you raising kids? You're not raising kids in a place like Kenilworth, are you? Because, of course, it's hard for kids to grow up in Kenilworth and the Kenilworths of America without becoming subtly racist, you know, especially because their parents don't tell them that Kenilworth is so white because we keep out black folks. They may not even know that, honestly. They tell them, well, those black folks just don't quite have the money. They don't quite have the social wherewithal yet. They're coming along. Which makes it the black folks' fault for not being in Kenilworth, despite the fact that there are literally thousands of black families in the Chicago area that have more income than the median income of Kenilworth. It is not black folks' fault. It's Kenilworth's fault. So I said I was an optimist. Well, I'm an optimist because I think most of these towns are on their last legs, and when they get publicity, they cave. And I think I think Ferguson, which is already not a sundown town, is in the process of caving in terms of its leftover sundown town policies. I would be amazed if the black population of Ferguson doesn't turn out and vote quite a bit more the next time they have a local election and vote in either black city officials or white city officials who have some connections with and identification with the black community so that they can get some better policing strategies and tactics in place.
Yeah, do you think, as you look at what happens with this officer, do you think he's going to be charged, or what do you think they'll do in that with the grand jury?
You know, I'm not going to make a comment about that. And the reason I'm not is because, I make this comment about why I'm not making a comment. It's just based on what I read in the paper, and you guys and your listeners read exactly what I read.
Yeah.
I really know what I'm talking about when I talk about sundown towns and race relations in general. But in this case, I don't know any more than you all, so I'm not going to pretend to. I will say that it's difficult to know because you don't want to bring somebody to trial unless you think you can convict.
Right,
so
that's
we're
true.
Just going to have to see what happens.
That's true. Hey, one last one before we let you fly. In saying that you're an optimist and you gave us great reasons why, especially with Ferguson and whatnot, how about just the fact with the younger generation, are many of them being raised where they don't have that whole stereotype. They don't have stereotypes floating around in their heads, and I guess maybe that depends on where they're raised, so maybe that goes back to the same thing that we've been talking about.
It depends. For instance, I knew some kids who were raised in Darien, Connecticut. Now, Darien is the Kenilworth of New York City. It's very prestigious, very rich. And these white kids, of course, were worried about and kind of afraid to take the subway in New York City, for instance, even during the day. Well, I've taken the subway in New York City all over the place, you know, during the day and during the night. I don't take it at 3 a.m., but then I'm not up at 3 a.m. So that's still showing a stereotype, you know. So it does depend on where you're raised. But, yes, I think that the people under the age of 25 do have a willingness to think about these things. So I am looking for change coming from the younger people.
Jim Lowen, thank you so much. The book is called Sundown Towns, A Hidden Dimension of American Racism. If people want to pick it up, they can get it on Amazon?
They can, and they can get it anywhere they want. It's any bookstore can get it.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Jim. Appreciate it.
I'm happy to talk with you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right, so different perspective in the research that he's done, and interesting in talking about Ferguson and some of the comparisons and, you know, ultimately where we fall as far as racism is concerned. It's so hard to gauge that, and it's, you know, so often unfortunately, this it can cut either way, and many of you have expressed that you know, sometimes the automatically somebody throws out the race card, and it is not that in this hunt for labels. And then sometimes it is absolutely what is the underlying tension and the feeling that is so prevalent in an area. So I really think so much of what he just said there has to do with where, how you're raised, what you encounter, all of the things that I've mentioned before, and how so many people try to say that doesn't have an effect on them, but it does. And sometimes it can have an effect where turns you in a, you know, flips you around in a different direction. It doesn't always have to be necessarily assumed that it's negative. So the positive, by the way, from Ferguson is the fact that it's been 2 days and there hasn't been the wild, crazy looting explosions and the things that we've seen before. And just to make it clear, because I've talked to a few people that have been in Ferguson, and we know Justin Duckham, who comes on the show, was just there. So many of the people that are causing the friction, by the way, are not from Ferguson. They're coming from other places. They threw some of the Molotov cocktails the last couple of nights. So a lot of the people that were arrested were from other parts of the country. They came in to Ferguson. And that makes a big difference with the protests, because if it's not the people themselves, they're not even from St. Louis, they're coming in from someplace else to jump into the fray, and they're immature, ridiculous, or decide they're going to loot and destroy and do something to property. Shame on them, obviously, but they're getting those people immediately right out of the crowd. So it stopped for the last 2 evenings, and hopefully that's the end of that. But there's still more to come here because of the grand jury and a few other things. So I think that in some way, even though the protest may stop temporarily, this has a chance to bubble back up in October, depending on what happens with the grand jury. So what a wild couple of weeks that it's been, not just here in the U.S. and some of the things that we're dealing with, but also obviously what we're seeing coming out of the Middle East and James Foley and the reaction to the video. And, you know, somebody said to me today, you know, how many people are watching the video? How many are, you know, because they have access to it, how many are hitting it, clicking, playing it? And isn't that what ultimately ISIS wants, to get the message out, to have more people watching it? And isn't that one of the downsides of social media? And I'd say, yeah, that would be absolutely a downside of social media. Thanks for listening to this hour of America Tonight.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for $35,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet for $35,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100-foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait. So call 866-91-STEEL. Lock in your price now. Call 866-91-STEEL. That's 866-917-8335.